We're going to have the reading first, and then I'll explain a bit about a time of prayer as well. But can I just say that if anyone else wants to go to the seminar, this is the time to go as well. Okay, thank you.
So our reading this morning is from 2 Kings chapter 2, 2 Kings chapter 2, and I'm reading it from the New English Translation, which will be slightly different to the Bible version that you have with you if you brought one in, unless you brought a New English Translation with you. And I'm starting at verse 2, and I'm going to leave out a few verses as I go through to verse 25. So you may want to listen rather than just catch up, but completely up to you. Starting at verse 2 of 2 Kings chapter 2. Just before the Lord took Elijah up to heaven in a windstorm, Elijah and Elisha were travelling from Gilgal. When they crossed over, Elijah said to Elisha, "What can I do for you before I am taken away from you?" Elisha answered, "May I receive a double portion of the prophetic spirit that energizes you?" Elijah replied, "That's a difficult request. If you see me taken away from you, though, may it be so. But if you don't, it will not happen." As they were walking along and talking, suddenly a fiery chariot pulled by fiery horses appeared. They went with Elijah and Elisha, and Elijah went up to heaven in a windstorm. While Elisha was watching, he was crying out, my father, the chariot and the horsemen of Israel." Then he could no longer see him. He grabbed his clothes and tore them in two. He picked up Elijah's cloak, which had fallen off him, and went back and stood on the shore of the Jordan. He took the cloak that had fallen off Elijah, hit the water with it, and said, "Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" When he hit the water, it divided, and Elisha crossed over. The men of the city of Jericho said to Elisha, "Look, the city has a good location, as our master can see, but the water is bad, and the land doesn't produce crops." Elisha said, "Get me a new jar and put some salt in it." So they got it. And he went out to the spring and threw the salt in. Then he said, "This is what the Lord says. I have purified this water. It will no longer cause death or fail to produce crops. The water has been pure to this very day, just as Elisha prophesied." He went up from there to Bethel, and as he was traveling up the road, some young boys came out of the city and made fun of him, saying, "Go on up, baldy, go on up, baldy." And when he returned and saw them, he called God's judgment down on them. Two female bears came out of the woods and ripped 42 of the boys to pieces. From there, he traveled to Mount Carmel and then back to Samaria.
Well, good morning, everybody. Especially lovely to have all of David's family and friends. And if you're in the balcony, hello as well. No nodding off up there. Right. Also, if you're another visitor, nothing to do with David's crew, then you're really welcome as well. Okay. So you guys are now sitting out there thinking, what is she going to talk about? She's going to talk about bears and boys and mauling. And I hope you're going to think, how am I going to get God out of a tight spot? I also want to thank John for reading, because it sounded like a massive bath, wasn't it? It was being undone as he was sitting in it, which kind of made me laugh. Okay, so as Chris said, I wasn't given this passage for today. This passage was set a year ago, and I did kind of look and think, oh my goodness, I've got to preach on this. But I can't dodge it. And actually, it's been a really, really interesting passage to look at. So, what kind of God, if there is one indeed, would do such a horrible thing? I mean, teenagers can be loud, they can be smelly, they can be untidy. Not you gorgeous lot here, obviously, but, you know, other teenagers. But mauling them because they said a guy was thin on top, oh, come on. So 2 Kings 2 is long and it's complicated. So what I've done is I've focused in on a really small part for us to chew on. And it's 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 23 to 24. And read the whole thing at home if you fancy it. But this is a bit that we're going to look at. And it is an open inquiry. Don't think I have all the answers. The older I get and the longer I've been a Christian, the more I realize I actually don't know, because the more there is to know. So please engage your brains and your hearts. And at the end, if you think what I've said is a load of old rubbish, you are entitled to come and have a conversation with me. So we could call this morning, where was it? No, wrong one. We could call it Hares, Prayers and Bears, or you could call it Bears, Boys, Bears and Baldness. Okay, you take your pick. And for me, this is one of the most troubling passages of the Bible. Okay, the lots of the Bible passages challenge me. Some passages I just kind of rather ignore. Some passages I seriously don't get. But there are a few stories as dramatic as this one. Now, when I was a teenager, which was eons ago, there was a group called Fat and Frantic. Can you put your hand up if you remember them? I know if you look, we're all the same generation. These are them. And can I just say, if you're into the Wren Collective, which was my lighthouse that David chose, these were big like them. And we used to travel around the country in minibuses, and we'd go to their gigs and we'd go, rah, rah, rah. And they had a song, which I was at their tour day, and they had a song called Bald Man's Revenge, all about this passage. And this is honestly true. We'd go, B-A-L-D-H-E-A-D, Bald Man's Revenge. And you can go and look on it on YouTube, and it's dire. But that's what we used to do. We used to get, obviously need to get out more. But I've had the joy of working with teenagers for over 25 years, and I've never, ever had any mauled by bears, despite the fact that I have worked with some who I'd quite like that they had been. So, let me read the small part to us again, just the two verses. Elisha went up from there, Jericho, to Bethel. As he was travelling up the road, some young boys came out of the city and made fun of him, saying, "Go on up, Baldy, go on up, Baldy." When he turned around and saw them, he called God's judgment down on them. 2 female bears came out of the woods and ripped 4 of the boys to pieces. And from there, he travelled to Mount Carmel and then back to Samaria. You can just see. If you know the Holy Land, you'll know where I mean. But it's that's the area we are. So just wait a minute. Okay, a bald man gets a little oversensitive, gets revenge on some kids because they make fun of his bald head. Now, if you don't worship here, you don't know that's our youth pastor. Could you just stand up, Andy, just to say that? Okay. If you're young, be very, very careful about him. So is that honestly what we're saying? And this passage about the bears is on the internet on lists entitled this, Weird Passage to Have a Go at Christians About, Ridiculous Bible Verses, 10 Worst Bible Passages Ever. And then I hung out in the Atheist Forum, and I like hanging out in the Atheist Forum because I find really interesting and totally justifiable questions about God. Totally justifiable questions. But these are my top 3 weird Bible passages. You can go home and make your own. Balaam's talking donkey, Numbers 22, 28. It reminds me of this guy. Okay? Isn't he great? Jonah in the big fish. Now, we're all familiar with it, but it is kind of odd, right? It is odd. And then this one, Elisha's bear attack. So let's go back to the passage and let's ask those uncomfortable but necessary questions. How can I believe in a God who sends bears to devour little children for innocently teasing an old man who was bald? Good question? Yes. Well, first, they weren't little kids. Okay? Now, I don't study Hebrew, so if I say this wrong, forgive me. But the Hebrew is Nurim Ketanim, which is best translated as young lads. The boys were not lads. That translation I deliberately picked because it's not helpful. The boys were between 12 and 30. And if you look in Genesis 37, it uses the same word about Joseph, who was 17. And in 1 Kings 20, it uses it about army men. So they're not kids, all right? And there may well have been several hundred lads there. It's quite a different picture you start getting. And secondly, Elisha wasn't old. He was about the same age as them. So he wasn't an old guy with a wispy comb over, because he lived another 60 years. So he's not some grumpy bloke. Oh, I've said that, sorry. He's not some grumpy bloke like Victor Meldrew saying, "I don't believe it. How dare you comment on my hair?" So Elisha was God's prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel, and the time we're sitting in is 892 to 832 before Christ. It's a long, long time ago. And he had the uncomfortable job of telling the people how much God loved them. Well, that's the easy bit. But how they had turned their back on him. And how this was going to cause them serious harm if they carried on. Because he wanted them back, and he wanted to save them from themselves. Elisha was respected by many, many people at his time. His name is actually in the Quran, and it's in the sacred writings of the Baha'i faith. If anyone's a Baha'i here, it's in there. And he's not a fantasy character. He's a historical figure. He's not like Goldilocks, who also hung around with bears, okay? It's not a fantasy character. So let's be clear, they were not kids. That's the first thing. And this insult wasn't to do with baldness either. We don't know if he was bald at all, because prophets often covered their heads. Look at this picture. Question for you. Can you tell if this holy man has hair under his hat? I rest my case. So the baldness jibe was nothing to do with baldness. It was to do with leprosy, which was a very serious skin disease. Because lepers were told to shave their heads, to shut up and shave. Okay, literally, be quiet, get lost, get out. You're a reject, you're a nobody, you're an outcast, you make me unclean. Shut up and shave. Okay, so the mocking, "Go on up, you bald head." You start to see how insulting it is. And the best equivalent I could come up with that I felt I could say in this church, okay, is pee off, scab face, go to hell. It's serious and it's shocking. Pee off, scab face, and go to hell. If you use more street language, you know why. That's the only way I could say it. But that is the shock of it. Okay? The phrase "go up" was most likely a reference to Elijah, as we've read when he went up in the chariot to heaven. So basically, these lads were taunting and insulting his prophet by saying this: "Go on then, scab face. Go up to heaven like your master did. Go on. Oh, you can't do it. Oh, dear. Go on up. Go on up. Oh, you can't. Well, get out of here anyway. No one likes prophets. Get lost. Go to hell." Start slightly different than "go away, bald man." Okay, you can start to see what it's actually saying. And the timing is very, very interesting in the whole thing. Because Elisha has just finished doing a mercy miracle for the entire city of Jericho. If you remember back on the map. And the city had been rebuilt against God's instructions in 1 Kings 16. Because it was rebuilt as an idol worship. They worshipped Baal against God's instructions. And because of that, the water, lots of history books talk about this, the water was disgusting. So the people, the crops, the animals, the land suffered. See verse 19. But God had seen their stress, okay, and he'd stepped in, which is kind of ironic because Baal was the god of sort of fertility and the rain, and then they'd been worshipping Baal for 500 years and he'd done nothing. Nothing. Slightly embarrassing then when Elisha rocks up and cures the city on every level. So he had cured a city of pagan priests who had led the people in dancing around golden calves, who had held child sacrifices, and who employed temple prostitutes. Okay, and this is a picture I couldn't really find. That's the sort of thing. So in every single way, we can start to see why God was displeased. Because he watched the people he loved make very bad decisions. And it kind of reminds me of the temple when Jesus went in and looks like on the surface he lost the plot, but he went in to clean the temple. Because both these situations have God's house, which was for prayer and forgiveness and love, being hijacked. And we know what Jesus did, don't we? He turned the tables over and made a big deal about it. So this youth mob, the commentators say, most likely would have heard about the miracle. It was kind of major news. And if anyone had tweeted from the city in those days, they would have said something like this: "Water sucks, we're all dying, holy guy rocks up, water pure again." Okay, it's you can't have not known about it. So the prophet of God comes along, blesses them, sorts out the mess, but he's not their God's prophet. And there is some discussion as to whether these guys roaming around, throwing their weight around, were up-and-coming priests of Baal. We don't know, but they certainly didn't love Yahweh at that point. So the mob squared up to Elisha between Bethel and Jericho, which was the center of their worship. The only equivalent is if the Pope walked into a Satanist area, okay, having just healed a city of Satanists, and then they told him to get lost. Okay, it's just that serious, walking into a very, very dark and corrupt place, which had children and women at the bottom of the pile. So this mob didn't like the message of God's love, and they didn't like the message that they were following Baal wasn't what was desired. Because having prophets around can be uncomfortable, right? Well, I don't want you telling me or showing me things that I might have to change. So they didn't welcome him. They didn't slap him on the back and say, thanks so much. But they verbally slapped and insulted God around. Now, picture the scene, hundreds of lads roaming around looking for trouble. Not good, right? Anyone fancy that? Football hooligans in that? You've seen it, right? It's unlikely it was their first time. It's unlikely that they kept their opinions to themselves and then this is the first time. So my guess is they had thrown their weight around, been out spitting in the street, had their trousers too low down, and their baseball caps at the back. That is the kind of mob you're talking about, not little kids. Okay, so the harmless teasing wasn't harmless. It was confrontational. I think Elijah was saying this when he calls down the judgment. You take over, God, because I cannot, and it's over to you. So in that sense, he's calling God's justice. He didn't call out the bears, but he asked God to step in and take over in a covenant, because his resources had run out. So he asked God to deal with them because these boys were loved by God. Deal with them because I can't. It's too important. Take over. Just for those of you who are interested, in Deuteronomy 7, verse 10, it makes it very clear that prophets were expected to do this. If someone came up and dissed God like that, they were expected to say, it's over to him. There was an expectation, but I think he was also saying, just take over. So the question to you is, have you ever felt like that? Okay, because I know that I have. Do we ever want God to take over and bring justice? Who here wants God to bring justice? Okay, so faced with this passage, I see myself in Elisha crying out for, and this is just the top of my list, but you will have a different list, for the war-weary, for refugees, for children who are starving, for the old and vulnerable in our own land, for the injustice done to the planet, for those beaten up because of their colour or their sexual orientation or their IQ. I hear myself cry, take over, sort it. It's too big, it's too important. But uncomfortably, I also see myself in the youth, dissing what God might do through other people who I might not get, or who make me feel a bit uncomfortable, or who bring a word into my life and I think, excuse me, but you don't know me, don't tell me that. And I can tell you, I stand before you today saying, I have not honoured God in all my decisions. I haven't even regarded him at times as having an opinion, and at other times his opinion is different to mine. So what about you? So we are clearer. They were a large, lippy, unruly gang who worshipped Baal and were used to throwing their weight around. But still, Rachel, why would God allow two bears to maul 42 lads for being verbally offensive? 42 lads? I could muse on the number of life, the universe and everything, but that's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, not the Bible. But as a quick aside, I'm not sure why they were there when the two bears came out. This is just an aside. Bear one mauls John. Bear two, I don't know, mauls Dester. And I sit there and take... What am I doing on a tablet of stone? I mean, am I taking a kind of a YouTube video and watching it? Everything about me says, what are you doing? Just run away. A bit like when you see people with tsunami. You know, you see the tsunami coming, don't you, on YouTube? And you think, why are you videoing it? Go away. So scholars disagree what we're supposed to take from the passage, okay? But I'm convinced of very few things. I'm convinced that this is not a social commentary about the youth of today. It's not saying they deserve a good talking to and, well, thank God he gave them a good hiding. Because it is never to do with what we deserve. Why? Because the love of God is all about what he freely gives, regardless of how good we think we are or whether we think we have deserved anything. So the great news about God is shown in Jesus that it is nothing to do with us. which I think is worth thanking God about. The message of Jesus is that he gives it all, his life, his love. He loves us so we are not ruined. So this idea that God sent it because they deserved it doesn't square with the whole of the Bible, to be honest, because it says that God is slow to anger, abounding in love. Check out Psalm 103 and Exodus 34:6. And then my favorite passage, the whole Bible, I think, is Micah 6:8. We read, "What does the Lord require of you, me, us, to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God?" So God is full of love and mercy. And I want to read you a little bit from Pope Francis' new book. This guy is I've just been reading it, and it's brilliant. A little bit on page 81. It's an interview. And the person says, "You say, Father, that God never tires of forgiving. It is us who get tired of asking. Why does God never tire of forgiving us?" And he says this: "Because he is God. Because he is mercy. Because mercy is the first attribute of God. Mercy is the name of God. There are no situations we cannot get out of. We are not condemned to sink into quicksand, in which the more we move, the deeper we sink. Jesus is there, his hand extended, ready to reach out and pull us out of the mud. We need only be conscious of our state. We need to ask for the grace to recognize ourselves as we are. The more that we acknowledge we're in need, the more shame and humility we feel, the sooner we feel his loving embrace. Jesus waits for us. He goes ahead of us. He extends his hand. He is patient. Mercy will always be greater than any sin. No one can put a limit on the love of the all-forgiving God." So it doesn't fit with me that this is about what they deserve. I'm also convinced that this has got nothing to do with Elisha using his kind of new power as a new prophet. Some scholars say he made an error. Because otherwise we end up with God being manipulated, right? I say, "Lord, I'd really like a car." Or "I'd really like a..." Someone else says, "I'd really like a husband. I'd really like a second home." Okay? And God, against his will and against his better judgment, answers our dubious prayers because we manipulate. Don't really think that's what's happened at all. Check out, who here watches John Oliver on last week? Yeah, okay. If you don't, go and check out John Oliver on his program last week tonight on his exposure of the corrupt American gospel preachers who basically look like they've got a gun to God's head, okay, for money. Okay? That is not what's happening. So this would be a convenient way for me to get God off the hook because it would blame Elisha, but I don't believe that's what's going on. And as we know, it's got nothing to do with baldness. But there is one thing I'm sure about, that this story has got something to do with the complete disrespect of divine authority. Okay? They were slapping God around through Elisha. "You just healed our land, but you know what? No thanks." That's serious. Because God had broken into their dead places, he'd broken into their corrupt places, and he brought new life, and they said, "Nah, do you know what? We really like the old way style. We prefer death and decay, thanks very much." So they were rejecting what God was offering, and indeed what he showed he actually was the only one could do. So a question to myself, and to you if you want to, do I see God's gifts and blessings, and his love, and reject it? Do I refuse to give him credit where credit's due? Now, whether you just feel that actually the bears were a coincidence, that's also fine. Okay, that's not really the issue. What it does show, though, clearly that it reminds us that God actually is God, whether you see that as the bears a coincidence or a direct result. So the lads were rejecting everything that had been done in his face. Okay, they hadn't noticed God painted colours in their lives. Do we? Do we notice when God suddenly brushes something new into our life, a new opportunity, a new friendship, better health, peace, harmony? Do we give credit to the someone greater than us or not? But you're still sitting there saying, we're still left with a problem, and we are. Shouldn't Elisha have acted more like Jesus? Well, actually, he did act like Jesus. Jesus took the insults and turned the other cheek, apart from when his father was being completely overruled, hence in the temple. And Elisha did the same thing. Am I stopping people from seeing God's love and power? Because that's what God takes so seriously, why the Baal and the temples were cleared. Do I stop people seeing God's love and power? Because if I do, I would like God to have a word with me about it. Because this is how seriously he takes it. Okay, we've now got one more I've missed. So that's Jesus in the temple. But we're still left with this guy, okay? The elephant in the room. Still seems God sends bears when he's disrespected. It still seems there are two gods. God of the Old Testament, a really, really horrible guy. God of the New Testament, really loving. And anyone here heard of Marcion? Is a guy 100 years after Christ who said, I really can't work this out. There's two gods going on here. And I'm sympathetic, aren't you? Are you sympathetic to how it hangs together? Because the Bible is full of portraits of God's love and also full of portraits of God being angry. Marcion was viewed a heretic, so we don't want to go there. It's clearly not two gods. But I do want to let you into a secret about this elephant. Christians and scholars have wrestled for years and still don't agree about this passage. Okay? And I wish it had been tidy because my preparation would have been a whole lot easier. They have struggled for years because life isn't tidy. The life of the Old Testament wasn't tidy. The life of the people writing the Bible wasn't tidy. Okay? So it's not tidy. It's not clear. But let's just take this very quickly as we close to something better, because otherwise it's just a history lesson, and quite frankly, who needs a history lesson on a Sunday morning? The previous Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, in his book, Being Christian, says the most wonderful things about the Bible, and this is one thing he said that stood out. He says the Bible is a very important thing to Christians. We know that, and in this church, we read it systematically. But we read it in community, right? Don't we? We don't go home. We do go home and reread, but we don't just interpret outside the community. But then he says this beautiful thing. He says, do not jump to conclusions while the story is being told or read, but read the Bible, bearing in mind the communities in which it was written down as well. So the shock of this bear story is this. It doesn't flow. It's short. It's to the point. It is clipped. It seems nonchalant, as if Elisha witnessed the mauling, whistled, showed no emotion, and just strolled off. This is the shock. But this, guys, is not the end of the story. It is not God's last word about himself. We must not read this passage in isolation. So in the Bible, we find the person of Jesus Christ, and there we see a God who turns violence on himself. Okay, he turns the violence on himself. And this is what he says. He says, I have had enough of relating like this. It is not working. This hurts you and me too much. And I will be the place where hate stops. I will be the place where hate stops. So on the cross, we see God saying he's got a better way for us to be friends. The cross is what makes sense of this passage and all other passages, and we must read this passage in the phenomenal light of Christ. Because in Christ, we find our God pouring himself out all over the communion table. Now, David, I know very well, David did not get baptized because he was scared of the bears, okay? But because he found God to be full of love, full of mercy and totally trustworthy. So Jesus is the way that God rewrites this story for us. And Jesus is the reason why we do not have to feed the bears.